Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the top 300 comics is sold through Diamond to retailers for May 2016. As always, this is the stuff selling into the stores, not what is selling out from the stores, because, well, that information just simply isn't available. And comics are a business-to-business-to-consumer business or industry, by which I mean the publishers sell to the retailers, so the first business is the publishers, the second business is the retailers, and then we, the readers, are the consumers that see at the end of the B2B2C thing. But from the publisher perspective, it's what sells into stores that really kind of determines what they continue publishing, what they don't, what they consider a success, a failure. And if that means stores are stuck with a bazillion copies of something they can't sell or don't have enough of something they could sell, well, them's the breaks. And some publishers are more supportive of retailers than others. Some try to be, at least. Some succeed better than others, too, sometimes. And as always, we always start with the breakdown of the top 300 comics through Diamond. Obviously, more than 300 comics come out in a given week, or a given month or whatever. But that's the visibility we've got.
Yep. Pretty standard month. Marvel clearly dominated. A little over 3.2 million units, which is 51.74% by units. DC in second place at 1.8 million approximately, 28.3% of the units. And Image Comics at about 330,800, representing another 5.2% of the units. Everybody else represents about 14.7% of the units.
Well, you know, Marvel did about 10 times what Image did, but Image still had a fairly strong showing. Not as strong as they've had in some months past, because at times they've been closer to the 10% mark than the 5% mark. The difference between Marvel and DC, not uncommon, Marvel coming out on top, is almost guaranteed. I mean, 9 times out of 10, 10 times out of 11 is it's Marvel, DC, and then usually Image and stuff. So no big surprises there. The fact, though, that Marvel is doing, you know, 3.2, almost 3.3 million units compared to DC's 1.8, that, I think, is a lot of what motivated Rebirth. Prior to that, it's what motivated the New 52. Prior to that, it's what motivated, I think, 1 year later. I'm sure I could keep rolling further back for prior examples. And I've heard Dan Didio say that he doesn't consider Marvel their competitor. He kind of considers, like, the TV and the movies on the DC stuff their competitors, because they're telling their stories, essentially. And I think there's a validity to that, but there's also an aspect of you're telling superhero stories in comics. Marvel's telling superhero stories in comics. You actually started out long before Marvel did. You had a home court advantage, or at least a first-to-market kind of advantage over them in some respects. So they kind of are your competition.
Well, yes, and it drives me nuts. In the entertainment world, this has become everyone's excuse for perceived failure or perceived lack of growth. Television will tell you, oh, streaming's cutting into our numbers. Movies will tell you television and DVDs are cutting into their numbers.
Or video games or video, the internet. Or
yeah, exactly. Everybody's got an excuse, which, you know, you almost have. Well, we're not doing as well as we thought. We aren't really growing, but you got to put a positive spin on that some way.
Well, how much of this do you feel is perceived failure versus perhaps actual? I don't want to use the word failure there, but actual lack of overwhelming success. How about that? That sounds a little more charitable.
I think it's about 50-50, maybe 60-40 actual lack of success than other things. You know, and I think it goes from item to item, book to book. When we get to the list, we'll talk about Batman 52 did stay over 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
There hadn't been a book that's done that for a 50-book consecutive run in close to a decade. And even that wasn't quite there. And you got to go back to the 90s for the one before that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's some success there.
Absolutely. But if you flip over to the top 300 comics breakdown history, I've got the chart in there of the monthly units for Marvel, DC, and everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fairly strong for Marvel the entire time, over the 2.5 million mark, sometimes getting above the 4 million mark. And DC, always noticeably less for the most part. There's, again, a couple of cases, launch of the new 52, etc., where they've done better than Marvel. But their stuff seems to center much more in the 2 to 2.5 million unit range. And then lately, you know, having dived below the 2 million range. So yeah. I think there is a case on DC side that some of it is perceived failure, but some of it is indeed actual failure.
Yes, and I think, again, I think it's important to take a little bit of a wider look at this. I'm zoomed out currently and looking at 07 to current, essentially. DC is tracking below Marvel, but kind of tracking where they are. And then there comes the launch of the new 52, and DC shoots above Marvel for 3-4 months. And then they stay even for about 6-8 months. And then they kind of go back to the dynamic before that, where they're behind minus the September events. I think where you do notice the big shift start
is really the last year.
It's really the last year. It starts about August of 15, where DC had one of its worst months. Then the September event shot them up, but not above Marvel. And then they kind of really trailed off after that.
Even if you take Marvel out of the equation and don't compare DC to anything other than DC's history, you're, mm-hmm. you know, if you scroll all the way to the left, this chart starts at March 2003, when mm-hmm. Diamond first started doing final orders, versus before that they were doing pre-orders,
mm-hmm.
which, again, apples, oranges, I try not to mix those. But even then, at the beginning, DC was below the 2 million mark, so it's not like this is the first time they've been in this area.
Nope.
But they got to a point where they were steadily, more or less steadily, they had a couple of bad months here and there, climbing and stuff, and then around the 2005 to 2007 range, were doing, again, reasonably well between that 2.5 to 3 million area pretty consistently. Then it kind of notches down, and they're in that 2 to 2.5 million, again, up until the beginning of around 2011. That's where they hit some rough stuff. That, again, is what kicked off the new 52, shot through the roof when they first launched. A lot of excitement, a lot of, you know, hey, what is this? Curiosities is the way I would chalk it up.
Mm-hmm.
And then a fairly steady decline over the next couple of months, as should be expected when you relaunch your entire line. People mm-hmm. will sample. They can't possibly afford to stick with everything, by and large. And then they were doing okay, but there's really, again, that last year, year and a half, where I'm pretty sure this would have been a little ways after Forever Evil and stuff, things just went south for DC. And I don't think there was any particular turning point or event or, you know, major mistake they made. But it's almost like the game plan they may have had for the new 52, the big arc of, oh, it'll build to Forever Evil and then, you know, we'll figure out the rest from there. They didn't figure out the rest, or if they did, it just didn't pan out. A lot of what Jim Lee and Dan Didio have gone on record of saying that Rebirth is almost a rebuttal to is stuff that's happened in that time frame. You know, Hal Jordan, Space Criminal, the Jeans version of Superman, the Robo Batman, things of that sort.
Yeah, and some of those have worked and some of them haven't. And I think as you look back, it's very interesting. I think perceptions change a lot as compared to reality.
Absolutely.
Convergence, you can argue, was an unmitigated failure.
I think that's very easy to say. It did not do well in even if it did okay financially, reputation-wise, I think it was pretty damaging for DC.
Yeah, and the numbers have been pretty bad since then, minus a couple of, you know, weird high spots for the, you know, Dark Knight 3 and a few other things. So, yeah, I think that really is the big changing point. But again, not as terrible as, you know, the old Mark Twain line, the
reports of the death
of my demise have been greatly exaggerated. You know, some of that's it is what it is.
DC's not dead, but I do think Convergence, if there was any turning point, it was around that time. And I don't necessarily blame it on necessarily Convergence itself, although I think that was a pretty serious bump in the road that threw a number of people out of the DC universe for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
But it also coincides with the relocation from New York to Burbank for DC. And that was just a fairly jarring change for them, not only geographically, but also in terms of personnel. Many people didn't make the move. They hired new people to fill the gaps. They already had some people there. It was a pretty big corporate, you know, shakeup there.
I guess I have 2 points about that. One, absolutely true what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Two is that's kind of a their problem, not my problem kind of situation. I was suggesting
it as a potential
explanation
and yes. root cause, not yes. that we should really care in yeah, terms well, yeah, of who, you know, they put it on themselves. Absolutely.
It's a failure of leadership to not properly prepare and take care of those things. It may be some crazy weeks for some employees, but if the customer notices, it's a failure in planning. If the customer doesn't notice and you've got some employees that are a little extra haggard and working some extra hours, that's why you plan for it.
Well, I think failure to plan and the leadership, to me, is very much the root cause of what led to Rebirth.
I tend to agree with that. But the other point I was going to make, most of the big complaints we heard from creators leaving DC, creators leaving DC and having major complaints about editorial, are actually from a year or two before that. They're not from that time period.
I think
the big complaints are about a year, year and a half into the New 52, not the 3 year point.
For the creators.
For the creators.
I think, though, the Convergence stuff and the shift coincides with the apathy that was setting in with the readers.
Oh, absolutely. But again, from the business side, like I said, not preparing for that move properly is kind of, well, that's on them. That shouldn't be a reader concern. And the creators that have said, I feel my creativity is stifled, we really heard much more of that a year, year and a half before that move than we did at that time.
I'll be honest, I'm surprised there's not some creators kind of up in arms right now at DC.
We've heard almost nothing.
Well, and that surprises me in so much as for the last couple of months, Jim Lee and Dan Didio have been pretty much throwing a couple of creative teams under the bus with certain things went out of control. They were off message. It wasn't the, you know, again, Hal Jordan, you know, should be a space cop, not a space criminal, complaining about things that happened on their watch as if the creators had just gone rogue and whatnot.
Those are two different issues. I agree. I think the leadership, particularly from Lee and DiDio, has been a little bit throw the team under the bus instead of owning it.
Mm-hmm.
I do think there was a lot of that. I also think if you look back at the people arguably they're talking about, those people aren't there yet anymore.
But they're also not speaking up in defense of we did what we were told or whatever their defense might be.
Well, at this point, they've moved on. Why give press to your former employer?
Fair point. And probably best not to.
And the current group, at this point, they got to be happy. DC's handing out guaranteed contracts and exclusives like they haven't in a decade or more.
Yes, the number of exclusives we're getting, not just at DC, but, you know, definitely there. I think we've gotten some with Marvel and also Valiant and a few other places.
Yeah, but Marvel, that's not new.
No, but I think
they've been locking those guys up for 5-6 years.
But right now, I think there's possibly as many or more exclusives, or it seems to be a higher profile thing, whereas for a while it had kind of died out since the last go-round of, you know, who's exclusive with who, you know? There was a point a couple of years ago, the exclusive announcements were happening fast and furious.
Yep.
Then they kind of, you know, died out because, well, everyone was almost locked up or whatever. But then when those periods ran out, there wasn't kind of a re-upping or whatever. And now we've gotten away from kind of the free agent sort of a thing. Again, back to a heavier percentage of exclusivity with the creators. And I think that can be good for everybody. It certainly can be good for the creators. It can be good for the publishers because they've got, you know, a known resource pool that they can plan around. And it could also be really good for the readers because we have the opportunity for creators to actually stay on a book long enough to tell some pretty good stories.
And DC has a stable of not necessarily exclusives, even though some of them have signed exclusive deals more recently, that have been very consistent for them without making headlines or anybody noticing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of guys like Palmiani and Connor. I know they're exclusive now. They haven't been for the last, you know, 5, 6, 10 years. Guys, Dan Jurgens, Ratman and Booth. They've got some creative teams that, while they haven't necessarily gotten the headlines for getting the big exclusives, have been very loyal and very consistent.
Well, and if I were a publisher or even an editor for that matter, I would be looking for and trying to get and retain those people that are not the uber superstars, top tier, unbelievably, you know, comparatively expensive talent. But those guys that have the tracker record, that have the loyalty and have the chops, they've been around the block, they know what they're doing, you can count on them, and you know what you're going to get out of them in terms of quality. You know, there's a lot to be said.
And reliability.
Yes, yes.
All those guys I mentioned, you haven't heard stories about long absences or delays or any of that kind of stuff either.
Well, there was a period that there were a couple of guys that, well, I thought they were really talented and stuff, were not kind of the superstar names. I'm thinking Leonard Kirk. There are one or two others. There were a couple of guys that were literally doing 2 monthly books over like a DC or something.
Huh?
And I'm like, man, that person worth their weight in gold. Not saying I'd pay them that, but man, well, that's the kind of guy I'd want to have working on one of my books.
And it's been 5, 6 years. One of the things I think a lot of people forget that was at the time, you talk about a workhorse. Remember when Mike Norton was a DC exclusive for about a year?
Oh, God, yeah.
He was doing those backups in Trinity plus the Green Arrow book. You know, unfortunately, he's no longer with them and he's moved on. He's doing great work on his own. And, you know, but yeah, guys like that who weren't necessarily superstars, but boy, were they dependable.
Well, I mean, I remember, again, with Mike Norton. He would show up doing an issue of Wonder Woman or Birds of Prey or, you know, what it seemed like he was somebody that the minute any other book may have gotten into a deadline jam. And I may be misremembering this. You know, he was just – it seemed like he was all over the place.
Yep.
And I mean that in a good way. Somebody needed somebody to fill in. They could count on him to get the book out, do it damn well, and do it on time.
Yeah.
You know, give the regular art team a breather, whatever. Plus, he'd done Power of the Atom or whatever the Atom was title was at the time.
Yeah.
Having guys like that in the stable that have that are, in my mind, future superstars. Whether they become that way, they certainly are deserving of that.
Yeah.
Again, Dan Jurgens falls into that category. Depending when you pick him in his career, at certain times he was that superstar.
Yeah.
It just seems like right now, Marvel's got the stronger bench. DC has some very solid people. I think with the exclusives, they've done some stuff to beef up their creative stable.
Mm-hmm.
They just are in a point where it's very easy for them to go up in terms of sales because they haven't gone much lower than this too many times before.
Yep.
And typically when they did, it was right before a major kind of a rebirth-ish sort of a initiative.
Yeah. So, yeah, they've had their moments, but we'll see what happens. At this point, we'll see what happens. And as I have said, and I know you don't necessarily agree, but whatever you think about the New 52 and the way it worked out, I think Marvel took a lot from it. The constant all new, all different. I know they've talked about it like seasons of a show and other things really started after that. There was a lot of ridicule coming from guys like Brevoort at the time the New 52 was announced. But within 6 months, Marvel was, oh, let's do that every 6 months ourselves.
I almost wish that there was a TV show, YouTube channel, something a la The Daily Show for comics. that could basically take the past footage of editors-in-chief like Reeve Ward at a company doing the, oh, well, we'll never reboot, we'll never do this, that, and the other, followed by them doing this, that, and the other.
Yeah, exactly. And again, it, you know, and Marvel arguably has done it better. They found the fans are happier with it. They found a way to keep it fresh and new and happy, and they're doing it better.
I don't know who's making the calls that's led to kind of Marvel's basic operating procedure these days. I don't know if it's Quesada. I don't know if it's somebody else, Brevo or whatever, but they've got a very interesting game plan because on the one hand, it's incredibly transparent, but it's also incredibly effective. Hey, let's take a character. Let's go replace them, you know, kill them or just replace them with somebody of an ethnicity or it's a villain or whatever, as they've done with most of their major characters over the last couple of years. But they do it in a way that, okay, you get the bump in the sales. It plays out for however long the story can play out. Then it's got almost an automatic next bump or reset kind of a move that's pretty obvious what's going to happen. You know, the fact that we now have a Captain America Steve Rogers title, he's back in the suit, whatever. Is anyone truly surprised by that? I don't think so. It was pretty obvious that when Falcon, Sam Wilson, became Captain America, sooner or later, Steve Rogers would be back as Captain America. Now, I'll admit I didn't see them both concurrently doing it, but hey, who cares?
Well, you know? And to be fair, we said the same thing when Bucky got the job.
Yeah.
To me, my favorite one is, and I wasn't reading the book at the time, when they killed Johnny Storm.
Yeah.
Before that issue came out, 99% of comic book fans had not only predicted he would return, but predicted when he would return, and they were all right.
I think I even predicted how he would return.
Yes, you did.
Pretty much dead on the money. And it's, on the one hand, it was kind of telegraphed. On the other hand, it's the logical flow of the story.
Yeah. Right. Same thing with Spidey and Doc Ock.
Yeah.
Most people, particularly when that issue, the one where we saw how it happened, kind of, it wasn't the final of Amazing, but the one or two before the end of Amazing, before Superior started, everyone went, okay, now we know how he's coming back. Yeah, what are they going to do? A year, year and a half, maybe? And pretty much they were, you know, everybody was right.
Every once in a while, they go a little longer than I would have expected. Yes. But
the fact that Wolverine's not back still surprises me.
Old Man Logan kind of gets around that, but yes, yeah. I agree. To me, it's obvious how even Wolverine comes back.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
He's encased in adamantium. They just need to get him out of there. He's alive. He'll heal.
Yep.
You know? But having that obvious next turning point gives it, I don't want to say a sense of stability or predictability, but comfort level, I guess.
Yep.
And the feel-goodness of, oh, well, I saw that coming. You feel smart that way, even if it's, in some cases, blindingly obvious. But the fact that they're also doing this on different titles, on a different cadence, and there's almost always something new and noteworthy over at Marvel, it's working well for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
They've got a very clear game playbook that, you know, works for them. And when DC has tried doing aspects of it, they haven't either understood the play or haven't been able to execute on it. And there's a certain aspect of not only does Marvel have a good game plan, they've got the right editors and creators in place to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Marvel's doing a lot of things right. And, you know, yeah, I think some of it they learned by watching what DC had done, but also stepping back, thinking about it, and making it their own versus just trying to clone and repeat.
Absolutely.
I mean, the whole 8-month jump after Secret Wars, not that different from the 1 year later jump after 52.
Nope. No. Before 52.
Before 52.
After Infinite Crisis.
After 50, Infinite Crisis. You're right. You're right. I'm sorry. 52
coming out and filled in the year that was missing weekly.
That's right. I've gotten 52 to the point,
was the missing year.
Was the missing year. So it was after it.
Oh, well, yes.
I've gotten to the point where comic book continuity, you know, I used to have a good head for it, but it's, they've replayed it so many times in so many ways, I've lost track of who's killed who, who's back from the dead, and why I should care sometimes.
Absolutely, and yeah. My brain's, with the DC Rebirth stuff, my brain's starting to hurt.
Mine started the minute I read the thing. Literally, I read it, I and I said this one when we did the review, I got a copy of it the day it came out, because I'd already had one aspect spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
But I read it, and it took me a couple of days to digest the thing and really kind of figure out the continuity ramifications, etc. Now, I'm not even going to say I've totally got it figured out now. But that, unsurprisingly, DC Universe Rebirth was the top seller this month.
Yep.
235,791 units. Obviously, well above the 100,000 mark, a little below the 250,000 mark. I'm expecting this to do pretty strong reorder unit activity next time, possibly even breaking into the top 50, maybe even higher. I know there's been a second printing. I know there's been a third printing. I don't know how big they are.
We also know they're at a much higher price point.
Yes.
Which gets into the next thing, retail rank on that book.
It was the number two retail rank because it had the $299 price tag. And even though it outsold Civil War II number zero, Civil War II number zero was a $499 book and therefore was the most money, I don't say most money making, that implies profit, but the one that brought in the most retail dollars at full cover price.
Yes, and the most wholesale dollars.
Let me correct. Not at full retail price, at whatever the invoiced rate was across the board.
Exactly. And so it sold about 60,000 less.
Yeah. And again, Civil War II at the 177,283 units, really impressive. Not as impressive as the first Civil War, but we've gone to so many events. It's not been that long since Secret War wars and stuff. It's just...
Well, I think it's important to point out this is a zero issue. Let's see what the numbers on number one are next month before we kind of...
That's true. Number one could easily do the 250,000 or above. Marvel's got a good track record with events. And the zero issue, like you said, it's not the number one.
I didn't read it yet. I'm 6 months behind, so I'll read it then. Just kind of knowing what we know about how things sell, the zero issue, let's not assume that's where Civil War starts until we get the number one.
Well, technically it is where it starts, but it's not what the number one will do.
Yes, it is not where the high point and then slide will begin from.
No, it's a very good point because, again, I think the number one will do better than this. Typically, that's what happens when they've done this before.
We actually did have a comment on the forum. Someone suggested that was a disappointing number.
For
Rebirth.
You know, I hear that. I understand where they're coming from. I'm not sure if I totally agree with that.
I'm not sure what then the number should be to be happy with. This seems like the high end of...
Given how DC events typically sell, and I think this one-shot was an event, not an event miniseries, but a fundamental turning point for the DC arc.
Yeah, it was like a single-issue event book.
Yeah.
Yep.
And definitely solicited as such.
Yep.
DC events don't sell anywhere near as well as Marvel ones typically do.
But they tend to start just over 100,000 and fall to just under 100,000.
So doing the 235,000, you know, I think is very strong. I think DC should be happy with that. But it's one of those things that this kind of an issue, this is one of the many reasons I'm glad I am not a retailer. My hat is off to these guys out there because how do you order this thing? You got no track record to go on. It's potentially of interest to every DC reader you've got, but maybe not. Maybe they just don't care about the overall arc. They just want to go see what Batman's doing this month.
And there's another comment here. We had one poster on the forum talking about how his shop forgot to pull his, or he didn't get one, or he decided to get one, and then they were having trouble getting the second printing. And I know anecdotally at my shop, they so far for Rebirth have essentially, and here's what's interesting, is I believe this one wasn't, but everything else has been returnable.
Correct. This was not returnable because they did the low price on the oversized issue.
Yeah, this issue wasn't, but the rest of Rebirth, at least next month's Rebirth titles, I believe, are.
The Rebirth in, I think, the first couple of issues or whatever, and only the first printings, if they do second printings on those will not be. Is my understanding.
Yeah. And I know, like I said, my local shop, those guys were talking this week, and I was talking to them on Tuesday night, actually, and they were saying something like, you know, hey, if it's not already in your pull box, don't bother coming in. for it, because unfortunately we don't have it. And it's not that we're hoarding them or trying to sell them on eBay or anything like that. It's just not only, yes, they got the ones for the normal kind of pull list customers. They got those taken care of. They got the pre-orders taken care of. They ordered an amount for the shop that they thought was a good amount. But what they've discovered is there's a lot of non-DC fans, per se, or normal Marvel fans or other fans that are regular customers or pull box customers that have called in the last week or two and said, hey, add those to my pull box. This and they've gone through most of what they had ordered for the shop that way.
This is the kind of issue that brings in the casual fan.
Yeah. And so, like I said, we're not trying to make an extra buck on these, but we are trying to service our more regular customers first. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that means there's not many on the racks, if any.
This is something that I believe if Bob Wayne was still at DC would have played out differently.
Mm.
I think Bob Wayne would have estimated the sales higher than whoever's making the call now and would have been ready to, if need be, go back to print quicker and more effectively and meet the demand that's currently not being met. I could be wrong on that, but it seems like this is the sort of thing he was really good about trying to make sure that they could strike while the iron's hot. I mean, literally to the point of if it sold out on the 25th when it came out, he'd be sitting there ready to on speed dial with the printer saying, do the next printing. It'll be out next week. I could be wrong, but again, that's the feeling I get.
And here's the other question. I mean, 200 minus, I know it had multiple covers, but how many multiple covers? Do you happen to have the order form? You're usually pretty good about knowing this stuff. How many multiple covers did that Rebirth special have?
That is an excellent question. Because
I don't think there was any major shenanigans with this book. Was there a variant or two? Yes. But there weren't 20. You didn't need a degree in advanced calculus to figure out what you were allowed to order.
I
don't know of any freebies. I haven't heard of this ending up in boxes or promotional units or any of that kind of stuff either.
I'm trying to figure out where the hell I put the one window that would pull up the file that I need. Sorry. Taking a little longer than I was expecting. I'll just open another window. I don't recall them doing any major shenanigans on this one.
That's right. Again, 235,000 is about as much as you can expect for a fairly shenanigan-free issue. I don't know what more you would hope for. There's probably at least one in 25 variant, but I don't think anything past that. And no crazy, you know, order 80% of this and that and 70% of that, you know.
Right. Oops, give me just a sec. Let's see. They had, I believe, just a limited edition variant, and that was it.
Yeah.
Let me pull up the retailer order form, which is where they...
Normally you find that stuff.
Yeah. I was actually pulling up the spreadsheet for the new and improved version just to see if that would
happen.
And that's where I got that first information. Just the limited edition variant. The regular version, it was not on a final order cutoff. That, I think, may be the difference.
So what did you have to do to get the variant? So there's only one, and what did you have to do to get it?
Quantities are limited. Allocations will occur is all it says in the note.
Okay.
Normally, so, that's where they do the 1 in 20 or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. So, again, nothing, not a ton of shenanigans on the variants, not a ton of variants.
But the key thing is, since if the week before somebody said, hey, I want a copy,
yep,
stores ordered what they ordered.
Yep.
You know, typically they would have a little bit of advanced reorder capability or whatever. And if DC wasn't prepared for the demand, and it seems like they may not have been.
I guess what I'm saying is, I guess you could call it a disappointment. I'm not sure how, minus some of those other tricks, any book has done any better.
I think the other thing to consider with this is it was a high-profile book.
Yeah.
I know I have two copies. I'm pretty sure Drew has two copies. I'm curious how many readers there were of this. I'm also curious how well this did digitally.
Well, I was going to say, I have it digitally. I actually don't have a physical copy. I've made peace with the fact that I don't need a physical copy if I have a digital copy. And it wasn't in the DCBS bundle for the Rebirth, so I said, well, I'll just buy it digitally when it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I've anecdotally, again, heard from several people, particularly mail order customers, who, due to the spoilers and some of the other things, chose to buy it digitally and then received or are still waiting to receive their mail order copy.
Yeah.
I think Drew's actually in that boat.
Well, again, my copy arrived on the Friday, but I had gone the Wednesday to the store to pick up a copy.
Yeah.
Other thing to factor in with this that I think capped the sales a little bit is the solicitation blurb was to be revealed at WonderCon. This is something that the way they solicited this, I think, undercut the sales. That whole DC previews came out after WonderCon, and that kind of short-circuited the typical ordering process.
Yeah. And again, I think all of that is just sad to me. That talks much more about the dysfunction of the industry than anything else.
To me, it was DC wanting to do a live presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And make a show of the thing.
Yep.
Versus, and it was a little of cutting off their nose to spite their face kind of a deal. I don't think that was the right move.
But that presentation was 8 weeks before the book came out?
8 weeks, but it was 2 weeks after the previews had come out. Or a week or two. It was
I understand off cycle. I understand what you're saying. It was off cycle. But again, I think that goes somewhat to the dysfunction of the industry.
Yes, obviously the pre-order aspect doesn't help.
8 weeks should be more than enough time for a book to grow its, you know, its do its PR thing and get people wanting it. And but this, well, we didn't know, so I didn't order, is kind of an odd.
But hang on, typically that would have been possible, except this item didn't go for the final order cutoff process.
Yeah.
So typically the retailers would have had, I think, until like the beginning of May, maybe even a week into May, to have adjusted their orders up.
Yeah.
But as it was, they had to do it during the April process. So,
again, lots of those things talk to just kind of the dysfunction of the whole system.
Having something that's much more responsive and a shorter cycle time between announcement, ordering, and filling would certainly help the industry. It would help the ordering and fulfillment side of it. It would probably kill the creators. And it's funny because the part that's speeding up is the creative side where they're going every other week or something on these books.
Yeah.
So,
which is going to be interesting to see how that works on one side. On the other hand, Marvel fans are like, yeah, they've been doing it for a while. It works fine.
I'm going to be curious what, because I keep my, what I pre-order in a spreadsheet just so I know what I'm expecting. I'm curious what that spreadsheet's going to look like in about 2 months when all the Rebirth stuff is really kind of maybe 3 or 4 months down the line. All the Rebirth stuff is kicked in. Everything at DC that's going twice monthly, everything at Marvel that's going every other week or whatever. Is it going to be something where instead of having 2 or 3 issues of a zillion titles, I've got like 7 or 8 issues of fewer titles? You know, and how does that make things look? And also, as a result of that, how does that make my perception of the reading process? Because I know at Marvel, at times, I felt like, wow, these books are coming out fast. And if DC's doing it just as well, does that now become my new cadence? Or does it feel a little overwhelming, and I've got kind of, this is an A week, this is a B week, now we're back to an A week, and that set of books again?
It will be interesting. I will say this. So far. And, you know, we're only, what, 3-4 weeks into Rebirth here.
Mm-hmm.
I think 3, maybe 4. I don't know. I have read the books that came out yesterday. But anyways, there are things that are feeling weekly, which I like. What I'm praying doesn't happen to DC is they start getting off cycle. Because so far, I mean, if you include the week of Rebirth, I've gotten a Batman issue. I've gotten one Batman issue every week. I've gotten one Superman issue every week. What I'm worried about is one book gets a week or two off, and all of a sudden I have no Batman for a week or two, and then I get 4 1 week.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we've talked about this with things like Titan and Doctor Who and some of the X titles. And if you're going to put out 4 or 5 a month, put them out 1 a week or maybe 1 week with 2, not 3 on 1 week and 2 on another week and none the other 2 weeks kind of thing.
It's interesting because...
And I'm hoping they keep that cadence.
I hope they do too, but I haven't heard any talk about that kind of a cadence and that even being part of their game plan or thought process.
Yeah.
But this is also the sort of thing where maybe an editor-in-chief who's got to traffic the books and keep them going, had he been part of the talk track for Rebirth, maybe that would have been what he talked about, maybe it wouldn't have been. But just like we saw a couple of the new 52 titles get significantly delayed, Justice League and one or two others.
We saw Jim Lee's book get delayed.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. We've seen a few others, you know, that started pretty bumpy, like, was it Secret Six, one. Suicide Squad, one of the two.
Well, okay, that was fifth or sixth or seventh wave.
I'm not saying it was all initial stuff.
The initial wave, for the first year or so, the only book that kind of got behind was Justice League.
Yeah.
And they gave him extra time. Suicide Squad doesn't even start till like September. So he's had an extra couple of months.
But with the twice monthly, it does make the delays potentially throw the cadence off and get to that feast or famine thing if they're not careful.
Exactly.
And hopefully that doesn't happen. We'll see. But it's... I think Rebirth is a game changer, not just for DC, but potentially for the industry. But because both Marvel and DC are going to this twice monthly frequency, it may make people start to feel that indie books are coming out slow, even though they're coming out just as fast as they used to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it gets to the point where during a hiatus for like Saga or something else, if they take more than a month off, you could get an entire story arc of a Batman thing in that time. And that makes the perception of how long that hiatus is seem bigger.
And that is the one thing I will say. The one thing I was hoping for that I didn't get in these first few issues is something that didn't resemble it was going to be a 4 or 5 issue arc.
Yeah. I was hoping with New 52 we'd get a bit more, not done in one, but satisfying in one sorts of stories.
Or just kind of traditionally ongoing.
Well, yeah.
Introduce something, wrap something up, introduce something else, wrap up the preview, you know, something that was more not, oh yeah, just take these four and here's one story.
And that's what I mean. It's not that the story finishes, but you get a sense of completeness to the issue.
Yeah.
Not just a chapter of a bigger story.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think current writers struggle with, or just... we've got a crop of writers. That's not what they came up doing. So it's alien to them potentially. And certainly the expectations of readers today versus 25 years ago, 30 years ago, very different. But I think because of the price points and things like that, not feeling that there's necessarily the return on the investment, that's a big hurdle to overcome for comics.
Yeah.
I think, considering the numbers for DC Rebirth, a disappointment's a little bit harsh and a little bit premature. I think once we see the reorder activity coming in next month or the month after, depending how long it takes to get the books out to the market, that may, you know, it may be a few, you know, tens of thousands. It may be significant. It could be 50, 60,000. You know, I think it is conceivable that DC Universe Rebirth number one could be a top 20 book next month. I'm not saying it will be. I'm saying it's possible.
Yeah, and someone asked that question. I personally don't think it's going to be that big. If they get another 40,000, which will probably, you know, put them around 35, 40, somewhere in there.
The fact they had to go to a third printing
mm-hmm.
makes me think it's possible.
It absolutely. Depends how big the second printing was.
It just seems like if you did under 30,000, that seems a little odd.
Yeah.
But, again, who knows? They could have done a 10,000, you know, print run for that.
Let's move down to the next book, because this one to me is a little bit surprising.
Mm-hmm.
Number three on the list, Punisher number one at 110,726. $3.99 book from Marvel. A great start for the Punisher. No ifs, ands, or buts about that, I would think. Do you still have the retailer order form? What kind of shenanigans were we dealing with here, or were there none?
This was actually in a different retailer order form because it was solicited in the prior month, so I just opened that up.
Okay.
We had the regular issue. We had a Bradstreet Hip Hop variant that they had to exceed 100% of their orders for Daredevil number 3 with orders of that regular cover to get as many as they wanted of this cover.
Okay.
Similar for the Christopher Action variant. Exceed 100% of, you know, yada yada.
Okay.
The Maliv variant was one variant for every 25 of the regular they purchase.
So one in 25, okay.
The Young was another exceed orders of Daredevil 3. The Age of Apocalypse variant was another Exceed the Order of Daredevil, with the regular cover, order as many as you want. Same with the Black Panther 50th anniversary and the Captain America 75th anniversary variants. Sorry, the Black Panther 50th anniversary variant was a 1 in 25. The Captain America was a 1 in 50. Which is ironic. I would have gone a 1 in 50 for Black Panther and a 1 in 75 for Captain America, just because of the anniversary aspects.
So that's 7 copies, yeah. I believe, of this. So a little more shenanigans than you would normally expect, but still a pretty good number for Punisher.
This is kind of standard shenanigans.
It's sad that we're at 7 and 3 or 4 that have the orders of different books, and this we're is now again, considering that standard.
Pull out the spreadsheet, do the research, get the slide rule out, the whole 9 yards. But, you know, because I looked at this when the numbers, when I was doing my article and stuff, yep. And it's like, you know, it's Punisher, it's, you know, got, it was the Gary Frank art, right?
Yes.
So classic artist for it. I mean, that makes sense, but it was very, actually, Steve Dillon, my mistake.
Yes, Mr. Preacher. Sorry, you're right. Not.
Yeah.
I think Gary Frank's an exclusive over at DC.
But it was one of those that it's like, okay, right artist for the book. It seemed to be hitting a sweet spot between it's in the Marvel Universe, but it's also, I think, going to appeal to the Punisher Max fans. But again, the minute you see all these damn variants, and there's only so many times I can mention that sort of a thing in my article where before I feel it's like, well, crap.
Got to write something new.
Yeah. This is obviously gonna go way down next time. The proof in the pudding for me on that is at rank number 9. We talked last month about how Black Panther was just, it did really well for its first issue. And it dropped 71.11% from the 268,781 total units it's done, and that includes some reorder activity this month, down to 77,653 units. So 71% drop, and it's still in the top 10. So it's not doing bad.
I was going to say, I believe that 77,000 still outdoes what both you and I predicted.
I think so.
Even though both of us more talked about where we thought issue 4 or 5 would be. And I said, hey, if it's still over 35,000, they're happy. And you said, I'll be happy if it's over 30,000. So.
And it's going to lose probably another 10 to 20% next time. And then by the time it hits that 6th issue or something, it's got a chance of staying above 50,000. It's also got a chance of being below 40,000.
Yeah. Again, though, different conversation. That number we were talking about last time was more in the 32,000 range. So, you know.
We'll revisit it when we get the 6th issue. We'll see.
Exactly.
But to me, Punisher is on the same sort of trajectory. It's not going to have a 70% drop. But it could easily have a 60% drop, at least a 50% probably. So I expect it to be, you know, 50, 60,000 next time, and then probably, you know, drop a little more from there.
I actually think 70% is totally possible.
I think it's possible. I don't think it's probable. I think 60 is just about guaranteed, though.
Yeah.
And then, of course, rank 4, we've got Batman 52 ending that entire volume over the 100,000 mark with 102,197 units. To me, this is one of the big successes of the new 52. This sort of run is just about unprecedented. New Avengers was the previous run that went for, 45 issues?
Well, I was going to say, there was a comment on the CBR article about this, and according to the poster, the last time anything stayed over 100,000 like this was New Avengers, the first 45. And before that, you got to go back to things like Spawn and New X-Men and, again, different Matrix and pre-orders versus units and all kinds of other things.
And I did a quick query and confirmed that the New Avengers, and that run was from like 2004 to 2008, thereabouts.
Yeah.
And it's funny because if 46, 7, 8, and 9 had managed to stay above the 100,000 mark, that would have pretty much, you know, because 50 did, you know, of New Avengers. And
but
it might have been around the time they, no, I guess it was a little later they relaunched.
Remember, this is closer to 60 issues.
Yes, because we've got.
There was 4 months twice
Well, and also
plus some zero, plus a zero, plus some other things.
The 4 weekly issues for the Villain Month stuff.
Well, yeah, that's what I was talking about. There was those two were times
even Batman.
You're right.
To me, yeah, that's part of what's impressive with this. The only ones that dipped below the 100,000 were, I think, two of the annuals, and that's not too surprising.
But again, you're essentially talking close to 60 issues.
Yeah, so very impressive. They should be proud on that. We'll see how Rebirth either continues that trend or completely breaks it and it goes into a tailspin.
Next one I think is more interesting. Hopefully you still have that order form up.
Yes, I do. And this is Captain America Steve Rogers number one. It did 99,767 units, so didn't crack the 100,000 mark. I find this one interesting for a couple of reasons. Before we get into the variants and how it did the nearly 100,000 mark, this to me is a case of it took a single book, Captain America, Sam Wilson, or, you know, whatever, and turned it instantly into a franchise and instantly displaced the other book as the leader of the franchise, the flagship of it. Because go figure, Steve Rogers is Captain America. I don't care what you call Sam Wilson. Great character. Love him with the shield, but he's not Captain America. Steve's an option.
And do we want to talk about that book?
Yeah, down at rank 65, Captain America's Sam Wilson, number 9, 27,479 units. That's better than a quarter of what Steve Rogers did.
I think that's fair. I agree. But to be fair, it's hard to say it was displaced. Issue 8, it lost 11%. It's down from 31,000 to 27,000.
When I say displaced, I don't mean it stole the sales from Sam Wilson.
Yeah.
I'm saying Sam Wilson was the de facto flagship of the Captain America franchise because it was a franchise of one book. Boom. Blown out of the water. The franchise leader is clearly for Captain America, Steve Rogers.
But
it would be as if when Aquaman and the others came out, that outsold Aquaman by a wide margin.
Yes. But I would argue there's two other books in this same range. At Spider-Woman, number 7, at rank 67, and Totally Awesome Hulk at rank 68, that are lower at 27,001 and 26,007, that experienced similar drops, and it's not like they had this replacement. To me, this is just where this book was going to land, regardless of whether or not that Steve Rogers book came out.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm not suggesting otherwise. My point isn't that Steve Rogers hurt the sales of this book.
Yeah.
My point was, this was always the second-tier Captain yes. America book. There just was no first-tier book to outplace it.
Absolutely. Sam Wilson never truly replaced Captain America, no matter how you looked at it.
Yeah, and the disparity between those sales of you know, 70,000, pretty staggering. Now, Steve Rogers, number one. It had the regular cover.
Mm-hmm.
It had an Epting variant that was a order one for every 50 of the regular you get.
So 1 in 50.
An action figure variant, which you had to exceed 200% of the orders for Captain America Sam Wilson number 2, with orders of Captain America Steve Rogers number 1 regular cover, and you could order as many as you wanted of this.
Which meant Marvel knew this was a second tier book going in.
That they Sam Wilson was.
200, yes, they placed it at 200% of that book to begin with. So they expected this to sell significantly better than that book anyways.
Now, in addition to the action figure variant that had that requirement, that same requirement also applied to the Young variant, the Age of Apocalypse variant, and the Hip Hop variant. So if you had done, let's see, Sam Wilson, Captain America, its second issue did, how did that do? Let me... 40,224. So if sales were evenly divided across all retailers.
Yeah, we're assuming it would have done this.
Pretty much everybody did twice as much order twice as much of Steve Rogers as the second issue of Sam Wilson.
Yeah.
At which point they could order as many as they wanted of the action figure, the Young, the Age of Apocalypse, and the Hip Hop variants. And in addition to that, there was a Captain America Steve Rogers Captain America 75th Anniversary variant, which is another 1 in 50.
Okay.
Now, when I go through these variants, I am looking at the retailer order form, in this case for March, with the other one, with Punisher it was also March, but with DC Rebirth I was looking at the April one. But this is what was initially solicited. I stress that because after the fact, certain variants pop up as part of the previews, plus between previews sorts of solicitations. And it takes, sometimes those are hard to chase down how many of those there are. But the previews plus stuff doesn't seem to list everything, which I find puzzling. So sometimes anything that's got like an 8,000 number or 9,000 number, like the Civil War II number zero thing, ranked number two here in the list, March 16, the item number is 8949.
Mm-hmm.
That was never in the previews retailer order form.
Got it.
And it may or may not have been in the previews plus stuff, which I find really annoying because that's what I'm using to power my new number crunching system I haven't yet cut over to because I haven't solved that particular problem. But it also means counting the variants and tracking them is a little bit more than just pulling up the retailer order form.
Yeah. But that also means that it was never in that or previews plus. There's a chance that's a box one, a GameStop, something else that's kind of beyond.
More likely it's a second or third printing sort of situation.
Also true. Well, and that's what I was going to ask. We just talked about whether or not 235.7's disappointing for Rebirth. Does Steve Rogers, number one, particularly with the press it got the day it came out, being under 100,000, seem slightly more disappointing? You know, Steve Rogers did worse than Punisher. That, to me, seems like the bigger surprise.
I was surprised Steve Rogers didn't crack the 100,000. I think they had built up to it with the Assault on Pleasant Hill event. It's Steve Rogers. If they had done this in the pages of a single Captain America book, I think it would have done better. This felt like something that should have cracked the 100,000 mark easily and not just by a few units.
Yeah, to me, this is the bigger surprise than the Rebirth number.
Absolutely. This is one that if I had had to place bets on how it would have done, I definitely would have gone higher than it did. Whereas with Rebirth, I might have even gone lower than 200,000 on that one.
Yeah, me too. If I had been asked, and I think I was by someone, I don't know if it's on the forum or anything, I think I guessed around 190.
This is part of why I tend not to guess too much on these things just yet. I think there is a predictive model to be had on this, but I think it's a woefully complex one because there's so damn many variables on this stuff. Less so with a Steve Rogers, Captain America thing, more so with like a DC Universe Rebirth.
Yeah. Nothing overly shocking in the next few other than how quickly these numbers start dwindling.
Actually, there is one that I found worthy of some discussion here.
Sure.
And that's at rank 11.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that was a little farther than I was going to go. But yes, top 10, I don't think there's anything left that's that interesting.
Well, in the rest of the top 10 is Star Wars, Justice League, Darth Vader. We talked about Black Panther and Amazing Spider-Man. So yeah, nothing really surprising.
Black Panther's the only interesting one, and we already covered it.
Exactly. Rank number 11, Scooby Apocalypse number 1, 69,520 units. I'm curious how the second issue does. I am thinking this... Drew's mindset seems to be that the afterlife of Archie crowd may love this, that kind of a thing. And I certainly think that's sound thinking. I think there's some merit to his thoughts there. But I also think there's a decent chance this may not play well for the audience. It's one of those, it could go either way. My inclination is this is more of a 30 to 40,000 book at best.
Which is... The afterlife with Archie crowd.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, that was 20. That was really more in the low mid 20s.
I guess my point is, I think Scooby Apocalypse is about to have an apocalypse.
Here's what I'll say. This one may surprise you. I had skipped this book. I read Scooby Team Up. This just looked weird and didn't feel like Scooby to me. And that was from before it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I do read Scooby Doo, Where Are You? And I do read Scooby Team Up. And chose to skip this one. Your negative review, as it was, for you personally, actually got me to pick this up, and I really enjoyed it. Once I went in not expecting it to be Scooby and kind of went, oh, that sounds like an interesting story anyways, I actually enjoyed it.
That's fair.
So I think it's not a Scooby crowd. But to be fair, your average Scooby crowd gets like 8,000 readers. So...
Well,
that's
not
the crowd they're going for.
I was
going
to say, Scooby-Doo Team-Up number 16 that Drew and I reviewed is down at rank 208
yeah.
with 8,400 units even. And that was actually up a little bit from the previous issue of that. How does that title seem to be averaging? The one that had the Gotham Girls did like over 15,000 First issue did around 13,000. Otherwise, it's between 6,600 and 9,000-ish. 9,000 being generous, more like 8,000-ish.
And the normal Scooby book, Scooby, Where Are You?
That's even further down.
At 297 at 5,000. It actually is up a little. It tends to average when we see it around 4,700. And like I said, it was missing quite a few. It doesn't always make the 300. But looking at the trend when it does, my guess is it's around 47,000, 48,000 or 4,700. And just if that's in the top 300, it makes it. If it's not, it doesn't.
Well, it's funny because that was one that I actually charted out for my Comic Book Resources article.
Yeah.
Because it's reasonably steady sales between the 4,000 and 5,000 mark. It's certainly not setting the world on fire. It is often below the top 300. There was a point where we got the top 400, so we had some visibility there.
Yep.
But it is stable enough and worthwhile for DC to continue publishing, and that makes sense. It's a good kid's book. It's an all-ages title. It's a familiar property. So it's one of those things that kind of proves out that there's more to what gets published than just, you know, did it hit the top 10 or, you know, whatever. It's more than just sales sometimes. But this is a case where DC is trying to have their cake and eat it too by doing the classic version with Scooby-Doo, Where Are You?, a crossover book, which is really kind of proving out the concept of Brave and the Bold and DC Comics Presents is still viable if you've got the right properties there. Because that's essentially the model that Scooby Team Up is doing. But now they're also going with the, let's go in a bold, new, different direction and kind of revamp the property with Scooby Apocalypse.
Which leads me, the first part of that, Team Up. Of all the things Marvel has brought back, how is Marvel Team Up with Spidey not one of the ones they brought back?
They kind of have. It's just full-time Deadpool is the co-star.
Okay.
But yes, it's one of those things that...
I love that. That was one of my favorite books as a kid growing up, with Marvel Team Up.
I prefer 2-in-1, actually.
I was going to say that was another one a lot of people liked.
But it was funny because at Marvel you had Spider-Man and The Thing as the two guys doing the crossovers.
Yep.
Versus, you know, Iron Man or Captain America or a few other potentially obvious choices. Spider-Man's an obvious choice. The Thing was that I was surprised by that. It worked great. I loved it.
The Spidey Johnnies were just classics.
Oh, yeah. But at DC, it was always Superman and Batman in DC Comics Presents and Brave and the Bold that were the team-up guys. And I think there is a potential team-up title to be had at each company that would really work. If I were going to do it over at DC, I would probably actually pick Nightwing as the anchor.
Oh, see, I'd go much farther down the list. I'd go for somebody who's fun and has proven people enjoy his funness, but no way can really support their own book, and go with big co-stars. I'm thinking characters like the Atom, characters like Deadman, but then the team-up's got to be Superman. They got to be Justice Leaguers as the team-up.
Interesting.
That would be the way Deadman, I think, would be the really great one.
Well, it certainly facilitates that he needs somebody to...
Absolutely. It's a character who's guaranteed to have a team up.
I would have gone with Nightwing because less in the New 52, but more classically, he's had connections to just so many other characters and is kind of the epitome of the team player at DC.
Yeah, also true. Now, it wouldn't be a bad choice. Just an idea I had would be Deadman. Mm-hmm. And like I said, even the Atom. Or bring back Ralph Dibny.
Actually, Elongated Man as...
Absolutely.
Him and Sue traveling the country, being the traveling detectives and teaming up with the different stuff. I would so buy that book.
Of course.
One
of the few things we haven't seen in Rebirth. I want Ralph back.
You should read more DC titles.
Okay, apparently I'm missing him then.
Fair enough. Yes. It's one of the things where I read everything. I know these things.
We'll talk afterwards.
We'll talk after. And if people are curious, post on the forum, we'll mention it there. I just don't want to spoil things for people who haven't already read that. Now, whether we continue to see stuff, who knows what's going to happen.
Yep.
Titles going and coming, and et cetera.
I think the next one's interesting, too.
Poe Dameron having lost 60% of his sales?
I mean, as Star Wars, essentially the lead in to the next movie, arguably the biggest new character they have that they've given a comic to, dropping from 175,000 down to 68.9 is, wow, that seems harsh. I figured just on the fact that it was a Star Wars, it wasn't going to drop that much.
But most of the Star Wars ones that have been doing well are the classic characters from the original trilogy.
I completely agree with that.
A guy who was in the latest movie and not even necessarily on screen all the time.
But arguably, he should be important in the next movie that's coming out in a few months.
Very well may be. He may be important in some of the other movies that they're doing, you know, etc. But until he's got a couple of movies and is kind of that fan favorite character versus, oh yeah, he was in a film.
Yeah.
I think they would actually do better, and no disrespect to Poe Dameron or the actor or anything, if it had been Star Wars BB-8, I don't think it would have lost this much.
Well, and I will say this, talking to classic characters, there's the book that finally came out this week, yesterday as we speak, that I think, yeah, I know we've got Civil War, yeah, I know we've got a bunch of rebirths, that Han Solo book I expect to be in the top 5 next month.
Definitely has all the potential for that, no two ways about that. Again, classic Star Wars character, one of the definitive ones.
Arguably the most popular character.
Yeah. We'll see how that does.
Yep.
Let's see. If you look at ranks 15 through 18, we see a common thread of Deadpool, either with Spider-Man, without, still without, or with the last days of magic.
And before we get too far, I do just want to mention, we're skipping over them, they're still doing well, Walking Dead and that last issue of Batman and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were the ones between there that we skipped.
Yes, we did skip
those. Both doing fine.
Walking Dead, a little below 69,000, but again, it's...
And got a bump, it's up. It's doing its down 2%, up 2% thing.
Yeah, it fluctuates. It's not doing quite the growth it had been at one point, but... Figuring it's doing 10 times how it had started, it can fluctuate a little at this range and still do fine.
Yep.
I think the sales of Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are good enough that they could justify another crossover.
It's going to be interesting to see how they make that happen.
In terms of?
How the money gets divided, who gets it.
If both sides are happy with the finances, yes.
Exactly.
Creatively, again, I mentioned this when we reviewed it, I'd like to see the four Robins team up with the four Turtles.
That would be interesting.
It just seems like a story that almost tells itself and could be a lot of fun.
Yep.
And
you did bring up, now, let's go back to the Deadpool books.
Again, we've got a lot of Deadpool. He's doing pretty well. The fact they all kind of clump together there, I find interesting. They're doing between the 55,600-700 for Days of Magic, up to 63,800-ish for Spider-Man Deadpool. Which is interesting because the Spider-Man Deadpool is selling more along the lines of a Deadpool title than a Spider-Man title, which kind of makes sense.
That makes perfect sense to me.
I mean, the Deadpool aspect of the title, I don't want to say might taint it for Spider-Man fans who aren't Deadpool fans, but the Spider-Man aspect of it isn't going to taint it for Deadpool fans, if you know what I mean. If you don't like one of the characters, you're going to stay with it if you like Deadpool, not if you like Spider-Man and not.
Exactly. That's my point, which is why it makes sense that it sells where Deadpool sells.
Let's see. Superman 52.
I was going to say, this is a big one. This one surprises me that it's down where it is. A little bit. Not that it really surprises me, but considering how major... This one's one we might get some reorder on.
This is one where I think DC marketing dropped the ball, and it may have been an intentional move because of editorial. Superman 52 did 54,316. It concluded the Super League epic, which was renamed to The Last Days of Superman, and leads into what's going on with some of the Rebirth, Superman Rebirth, etc. stuff.
Directly. The first page of Rebirth said, go read this book first.
I think we may not see necessarily reorder activity of this.
Digital?
Trade. If I were DC, I would try to have had this in trade by now.
DC's terrible about doing that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's probably just not going to happen. And
Well, again, this goes back to the marketplace not being able to react fast enough.
Here's the other thing. It does. Here's the other thing. If that is the case, I would say it would be foolish of them, even though I know how this story played out and where. This issue almost has to go in the Justice League Darkseid War trade.
I'm not sure I agree with that.
Okay.
What I would do...
You call it like the, you know, the lead up to Rebirth or something.
I would call it the Last Days of Superman, or mm-hmm. Final Days, whatever they titled the retitled the story as.
Yep.
I would also put the original Death of Superman storyline in trade, offer it again.
Well, yeah, but that's perennially in trade.
True, but to me it's not a matter of is it available, it's are they pushing it?
Okay.
And doing that in the next previews or something, I mean, there's a certain interest level in it that might not have been there a month or two back.
Yeah. I think it would be very interesting. I don't know. Like I said, I'd put this with the Justice League trade and the Darkseid War and call it like, you know, lead up to Rebirth or something. But I can see doing it either way or putting it both places.
I would just have it as part of it, but I would have both of those trades out soon.
Also true, and also probably won't happen at DC.
Nope. That's not the way they operate, and that's intentional, and I kind of support that, though.
Yep.
They're trying to keep the Wednesday Warriors focused on the books versus, hey, you can get it in trade in a few weeks. The next one, a little bit further down at rank 29 that I want to talk about is Future Quest number 1, 48,626 units. The fact this didn't crack 50,000 surprises me a bit. This is one that I expect may go down on the next two issues, but we may see that fourth issue turnaround. This has, I think, a lot of potential. It just depends on the average age of comic fans these days. I think for a younger audience, this is not going to do as well as it will for a little bit more older audience, my age-ish and above, maybe a little below. But I think if you get too many years younger than I am, I think for the 40 and below crowd, this may not work as well as for certainly the 45 and above.
I tend to agree. I've heard a lot about this book. I missed Johnny Quest. I just did. I'm too young. And I'm not that old. I mean, I'm not that young.
I guess for me, the Johnny Quest part was incidental so much as it had all of the other Hanna-Barbera characters.
You know, yeah.
Birdman, Shazam, Space Ghost. I was familiar with Johnny Quest, but more from comics than cartoons. But I think the fact that it's bringing back most of the Hanna-Barbera superhero and space hero characters, this has the potential of being a viable universe in the DC Megaverse, Multiverse, whatever they want to call it today, that they could really build up and do as a small kind of imprint on its own.
Yeah, absolutely. And if it works, it's great. I'm hoping there's an audience for it. Somehow I feel like I missed all that stuff. And I'm not that much younger than you, but to me, Hanna-Barbera was Jetsons and Flintstones and Scooby reruns. Whereas this stuff, the stuff you were just talking about, didn't get rerun as much, at least not when I was a kid, or at least not in the city I was in. So I'm kind of aware of all those names. I can't tell you much about any of those characters.
Interesting.
Have no nostalgia for them.
I'm trying to remember when I came across most of them, and it would have been while I was living in San Diego. So it probably would have been on one of the LA channels, probably, or Saturday morning cartoon type stuff. I'd have to go look up when some of these characters were on the air on Saturday mornings, because I think some of it is stuff that I had to have seen in reruns, because some of these things are, you know, 50-year-old characters or what.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched Scooby-Doo as a kid, but not when it was first run.
Yeah, well, me too. Like I said, for me, Hanna-Barbera were really those three. The Flintstones, Scooby, and the Jetsons in nonstop reruns ad nauseum when I was, you know, a kid.
But again, I think the perceived generation gap on some of those types of characters is measured in like, a year or two type increments. You know
Absolutely.
What I mean? It's kind of, it reminds me of kind of a conversation I had heard about that may be apocryphal, but it may have happened, between Mark Wade and Alex Ross when Kingdom Come was being put together. And it was a question of the use of two different characters. And for Mark Waid, Martian Manhunter was kind of that quintessential Justice Leaguer or whatever. I guess Alex Ross is just enough younger and falls perhaps more into to my age bracket. And again, I'm not that much younger than Mark Waid, I think. Martian Manhunter was almost nowhere to be found when I was coming up, reading the Justice League and stuff. Plastic Man, however, was all over the cartoon and stuff, so I knew him. And again, that's one that just a couple of years difference determines who you would consider, be it a core Avenger, Justice League, or Titan, you know, Defender, whatever. Or even if you would consider certain teams active.
Yeah, and we might as well, we had a discussion with several of us on the last previews teleconference about that very thing. Who's the Justice League to you? And there may be 15 years between four of us, and all four of us had very different opinions.
Yeah. And none of them right or wrong.
No, just, but it clearly showed an age or what we read or something different.
I mean, to me, that's what's fascinating about comics and getting to the point of frustration about comics is what do you consider for each individual person kind of the iconic archetypal aspects of the DC or the Marvel universe? Is it the Avengers Tower or the Avengers Mansion? Is it the Happy Harbor Cave for the Teen Titans or Titans Tower for the new Teen Titans? Is it the Watchtower, the satellite, or where for the Justice League? You know, and
for those of us that grew up on the cartoon, it was still the Hall of Justice.
Yeah, I loved when Dwayne McDuffie, when he was writing the Justice League book, brought that into the DC canon.
Yep.
He's one of a handful of people that I would put as major losses to the industry that went away far too young. I think Dwayne McDuffie had just so much more to offer to the industry. Brilliant writer, and I think underrated as just for what he's contributed, both in comics, in animation, etc. But yeah, it's, again, what do you consider kind of those iconic aspects of the universe? And hell, you look at what we've got right now versus what we had at Marvel or DC a year ago, and that's almost that generational gap right there again.
And I do want to mention some of the books we skipped.
Sure.
Only because, to me, this is where it gets really interesting between the big two.
Okay.
As we said, there's a group of Deadpool books. And then, kind of from rank 16 almost all the way down to Gwenpool at rank 52. This, to me, is arguably the heart of the Marvel Universe between 62,000 and about 33,000. Probably 80% of those titles are Marvel books. Detective's thrown in there. Future Quest is thrown in there. Harley's thrown in there. But the rest of this is just, you know, Deadpool, 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 Old Man Logan, all new, all different Avengers, all new X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, Extraordinary X-Men, Doctor Strange, Invincible Iron Man, Spider-Man, Mighty Thor, Thunderbolts, Daredevil, another Deadpool, Daredevil Punisher, sorry, Amazing Spider-Man, Uncanny Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy, all new Wolverine, Gwen, that's kind of the heart of the Marvel Universe. And it's, you could argue it averages around 42,000, 43,000. The first place you see any run like that of DC, which again is harder to come up with, is more in the 101 to 112 range.
Well, it
Green
depends
Lantern,
how you define
Teen Titans, Bombshells, Lois and Clark, Batman Beyond, Swamp Thing, Earth 2, and Titans Hunt. And those average about 18,000.
It depends how you define a run of DC comics on this list. If you say three in a row is a run, you passed over Batman, Superman, Green Lantern, and Flash all around the 32,000 level.
Yes, just under that you do have three, but then you get a whole group of Marvel books again.
But the only time you have four DC books in a row is down where you mentioned out of the top 100.
Yeah.
This is the sort of stuff that is why DC is doing things like Rebirth.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing I find interesting, right in that range, that 30,000-40,000-ish area, where a lot of those Marvel books are, a non-Marvel book, a non-DC book that is in there is Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, number
rank 42.
38,537 units. I'm liking the book. It's a lot of fun. I am really curious how the annual does. I had that as one of my picks in the latest preview spotlight. They're having a lot of kind of, you know, big name indie comic creators do their take on the Power Rangers. And I think that could really open up Power Ranger fans to other creators and fans of those other creators potentially to the Power Rangers.
I picked up these books up to issue 4 so far for my son.
Mm-hmm.
You're liking it, which is great. I'm hoping it's playing to an older Power Rangers base, because I will say this, to my 5-year-old, it's a lot of talking and not much action.
Yes, I don't think it's geared towards
the kids. They're currently watching a show on Nickelodeon, I'll tell you that.
It's not a high action kind of a thing, and I think younger readers, yeah, I could see that being the case. I question what the average age of the viewers of Power Rangers currently is.
Here's what I know. Walking into my son's preschool, there's a whole group of Power Rangers fans. Like I said, I don't think that comic book would keep any of their interest.
No, but I'm also not sure what percentage of the Power Ranger fan base is that age.
Oh, I agree. There's clearly older fans, in-between fans, all of those things. Absolutely. But the newest generation, that book's not for.
No, and should they be doing a younger reader version as well?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. I think if they did one that was heavy action, another one that was a bit more character-focused, then you could kind of mix and match, pick what you want.
The other thing I think was an interesting choice for those younger readers is they went back to Mighty Morphin. That's 25 years ago for a 5-year-old. That might as well be ancient history.
Oh, yeah. The fact they went that far back surprises me a little. It's iconic. It's when the franchise was at its peak. But it also, like you said, goes back nearly 25 years to the 1992 to 94 range.
Yeah.
It's older than potentially a lot of the viewers of the show, depending, again, what age they go. I think a lot of fans are actually skewing older, more high school, college age type stuff.
Which is entirely possible. Again, my perspective is very skewed because I was never a fan. I did not watch an episode until my son came home from preschool one day. And this is what all the kids are talking about. What they, you know, and I found him on Netflix. But even it's weird. I don't know if it's the production values, the video quality. We have tried just about all of them with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's the last 3 or 4 he's most interested in.
It's funny because I think the Power Rangers have gone through a similar or not too horribly different kind of a growth cycle as a lot of comic properties. There's what it starts out as, and maybe it hits big, whatever. I mean, you look at the original Deadpool character and what we got now, and it's night and day difference. And you look at the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers in really the first those first 3 seasons. That's one era of the show. There's a wackiness to it at times, a high comedic relief kind of a deal. You then have a little bit of a transition over the next 4 or 5 years where that's still in there, but now they're getting to where they rotate the cast every year, that kind of a situation. But then you've got an almost 10-year range where the comedy aspect is almost jettisoned, not entirely, but it's more straight-up drama, more of that sort of a thing. But then when Saban got it back, they reintroduced some of the comedic elements, you know, the Bulk character, things like that. And it almost went back to an earlier kind of a sensibility. And there are different seasons at different points that I think are high points or low points, and different people will disagree and think different seasons different ways. But it's also like, you know, when do you think Batman was really Batman versus they're not doing the right stuff or more Deadpool or some of these other characters? You know, it's some of these properties are so fluid that you can do a jeans and t-shirt Superman followed by a classic one followed by, you know, another version or whatever, or the Robo Batman versus the classic or what have you. And yeah, there are times where it's the same property, but it's so fundamentally different that you get to a point where you go back any further and nope, it's just not for me anymore.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we've shown my son pretty much at least the first few episodes of all of them. The ones he asked for and wants to watch are kind of RPM forward. You know, RPM, the two samurais, the two Megaforces. Interesting that RPM's
included.
Well, he's a car nut. He's a little kid. He loves trains. He loves cars. He loves machines. So, yeah, RPM. Plus, the fact that Rose McIver was on that show made me and Mom a little more interested, just to go, wow, she looks so young. She looks so different. There were probably some external forces that pushed RPM on him. But Samurai and Mega Force and Dino Charge are the ones he really loves.
I can see that. RPM had a bit of a Mad Max feel to it in a very interesting way. It also had one of the most almost subversive comedy aspects to it, where one of the Rangers is commenting on the, what the hell are these explosions behind us when we morph?
Yes.
What's going on with that? It's hilarious.
It's absolutely hilarious. And I don't think he gets any of that. But again, since I have to sit and watch them with him, it's a lot better for me.
And I think there are certain seasons that play better to certain age groups. When you start to pick up on that level of the humor, Ninja Storm and a few other seasons also do pretty well, I think. But it's a matter of when you've got a property that spans 20 teams almost, and different sensibilities, different age groups, different mentalities. You know, is this a straight translation of the Japanese show? Are they going in a new direction? What are they trying to do? Trying to figure out, you know, which version of the property you do as a comic, what age group you target it to, that's tough.
Yeah.
But I think Boom Studios has a Boom's Kids line that they could do a more action-oriented, you know, kind of a version of it, and maybe, you know, have the message of the week, those sorts of things, a la what the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers had. And they could be doing more character-based, more, I don't say more sophisticated stories, but you know what I mean, less action-based. Little bit more cerebral or whatever. You know, the property has that kind of a range. They've at least done very good quality on it. And I'm curious where they're going to go with the property and if it's successful enough, they're going to try to go for the long haul on this.
And again, I'll say this, having, again, just seen a few of most seasons and watched the newer seasons, while the jokes are there and the camp value is still there, the production is a million times better.
Oh, yeah.
You watch Mighty Morphin after Dino Charge is like going back to the Stone Ages as far as just the video quality and the special effects and some of that stuff.
Well, again, you're dealing with the video quality of the 90s.
Yep.
And guys in rubber suits duking it out for the Monster and Zord stuff versus pretty high-end special effects and computer graphics these days.
Yep.
It's night and day. As to how well some of it's aged.
Yeah, and here's something I'm noticing with the younger generation. So much 3D animation is out there, computer-generated animation. You know, my kids kind of turn their nose up at traditional animation.
Really?
Whether it be the old, you know, I can put on the classic Disney films, and instead of, you know, as opposed to like the Pixar film, like, this looks old, this is boring, and, you know, you know. They've got no interest in Pinocchio as compared to, you know, Wreck-It Ralph. And half of it starts with the visuals right there. And you can already see a difference.
You think it's just like the flatness of the 2D versus the dimensionality of the 3D? Maybe.
And I'm just so old that, you know, I grew up on the Saturday morning stuff. The 3D still looks a little weird to me. It's not quite animation to me.
It's funny because I fall into the same kind of a category. There's the Ladybug Miraculous thing that's a 3D thing, and I've watched an episode. It's good,
mm-hmm.
but it feels almost more in the vein, because it's 3D, of like The Incredibles or something, than like a comic book kind of a property, where I expect, again, more of a 2D look. And it brings to mind titles like Faster Than Light, where they're actually using 3D computer art and then kind of flattening it down to a comic book look. You could argue if you think they're doing a good job or not, but, you know, I've listened to Brian Haberlin, the artist on that, who's mm-hmm. one of the co-creators of Witchblade, worked on Spawn, has done one of the longest original graphic novels ever. Listening to his process is fascinating, because he can do 3 to 6 pages a day, it sounds like.
If he's got the sets constructed.
Yes. Obviously, there's some prep work, etc., and it works better for certain types of properties and stuff than others. It's the kind of thing that if you were to do, say, a classic Star Trek show where it's basically everything happens on the ship,
yep.
awesome for that. If you're doing the equivalent of like a Doctor Who, where they go to a brand new alien planet every other episode or something, and you've got totally different aliens every time, maybe it doesn't work so well. You know, it comes down to how reusable is are your standing sets and things like that.
But shows are written that way. There's a reason 3D animation, or the early days of animation, you had those things. The backgrounds didn't change.
Well, the Filmation school of thought.
Yeah.
Kind of, okay, we've got the Scooby Gang running. Let's reuse it.
Yep.
Every episode.
Yep.
And again, there's nothing right or wrong about it. There's an aspect of this art that is commerce. And, you know, crunching the numbers and making the budget work, there's an art to that, too.
Well, again, very anecdotally in my family, but it's interesting. I'm a huge Simpsons fan. And for the most part, the Simpsons are non-offensive enough, and they show a rerun here in L.A. right around the time, right before the kids' bedtime.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, hey, sit on Daddy's lap, we'll all watch The Simpsons, the kids love it, and it's they know when it's over, it's kind of bedtime, it winds them down, it works out great.
Mm-hmm.
Even, I've noticed there, from the newer, you know, even though the computer-generated animation that they've done since season 20 is designed to look like the older style, the kids notice it, and there's almost an instant tune-out, when, particularly when you see those, the 3x4 screen, and that older animation from the, you know, the first 7 seasons.
Really?
Yeah. It's just, you know,
you know, I guess I understand old that because there's an aspect where at one point, you know, getting me to watch anything black and white, it's like, oh, that's old stuff.
Yeah. Well, as a kid, one of the things I remember vividly as a kid, I loved Gilligan's Island. The show is terrible. I was 8. Give me a break.
That's Gilligan's Island. It's classic.
Exactly. But there's that season in black and white.
Yeah.
I couldn't sit through those episodes.
Now, how much do you think that same, not exact same mindset, but similar kind of a mindset comes into play with comics in terms of continuity instead of production values? Where there is a matter of, you know what, this is previous continuity, therefore it's irrelevant, I'm tuning out.
I was going to go more with art style.
But okay.
Continuity, well, and I feel bits and pieces of it. Rebirth has brought up bits and pieces of it.
There was something about the art of Rebirth, the coloring, the way things popped off the page. I don't know how much was story and how much was visual, but it connected with me in a way that a lot of comics just aren't these days. And I'm really, you know, I mentioned this when I was recording with Drew for the latest Weekly Comics Spotlight. I'm trying to figure out what it is about all of that that's working and not working for me, and trying to articulate that.
Well, and here is the interesting thing. Rebirth, as much as I want to love it, and there are things I do like about it, the actual Rebirth book, because of who was the guest star or the star of that book,
mm-hmm.
I kind of tuned out. That particular niche of continuity is not in my wheelhouse.
Whereas it was a key aspect for me, and therefore maybe it's neither the story nor the art, but the character I was connecting with.
Exactly. Whereas the bringing back the 90s version of another character has made those books some of my favorites done in Rebirth.
Yeah, interesting. When you were saying art style, it's funny you mention that, because down at rank 298 here, we've got George Perez's Sirens number 5.
Yes.
I am one of the big George Perez fans out there. He's a phenomenal artist. But due to this being, maybe, say, a year delayed compared to when it was originally done and a few things like that, the story momentum's kind of shot for me on the thing. But it's also one of those things, and I don't know if it's the physical printing and production values, but those pages aren't popping for me like I would expect his art to do.
I have a lot of things to say about that book. I don't care for it. I don't. How do I want to put this? I am a George Perez fan.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, I love the George Perez big two heroes that I know.
Of like the 80s era and thereabouts.
Or the 90s.
Avengers, even, Justice League, etc.
Exactly. This book's doing nothing for me. It doesn't. The art doesn't particularly wow me. The story doesn't particularly wow me. I don't know the characters. It's George Perez. I want to see, you know, Thor and Captain America and Iron Man and Batman and Superman and the big poses and the big group shots and the new Teen Titans. This book just has none of that. So to me, it almost feels like it's not a George Perez book.
I'm right there with you, but it's almost like you're arguing that creator-owned properties are, I don't say pointless, because that's not what you're trying to argue, but you know what I mean? That we want to see these guys on the classic institutional characters. And part of it is we grew up with him doing those characters.
Let me rephrase that, because I think that's true to a degree. I absolutely think that's true to a degree. And I've said this over and over again. I don't care who's doing Batman, I'm buying it, and I'm loving it. I may be critical of it, but I'm still buying it and still looking forward to the next one. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to change.
And loving it and being critical of it, you can do that at the same time. I do it all the time. It drives people nuts.
Exactly. That's not going to change. On the other hand, there are creator-owned books I really, really, really like. It's great. My wife and her best friend are into the Wynonna Earp television show, which I also enjoy. It has been so much fun to pull out my old Wynonna trades or issues and introduce them to my wife. I love Bo Smith's work. I've even got her reading some of those old Guy Gardner books that he did.
Mm.
There's something about Bo I love. That's great. So it works in that case. I don't need to see him on Guy, or I need to see Bo being Bo. On the other hand, George Perez, to me, so many years in that box of Big Two, you know, maybe the story just isn't very inspired. Maybe I'm just not connecting with this story, and it's got nothing to do with George.
I guess what I would like to see is for George to do as a guest artist, say an issue of like Astro City.
I was just going to say, Astro City, I would love to see him do.
An issue that does totally new characters.
That's fine.
So it's not even like, well, these are Astro City, it's the Samaritan, it's Jack in the Box, it's whoever. No. Something to where it's like, okay, it's the standard, not standard, just standard story for Astro City is kind of oxymoronic. It's an Astro City story, but it's something that would allow George Perez to do iconic archetypal sorts of characters, yet still be doing something brand new too. You know what I mean? It would be,
yep.
I'm curious how that would work for me, because I know the story quality I get out of Astro City wouldn't be the problem. And it's a question, and not that I'm saying the story quality of Sirens is a problem. The story momentum certainly has been.
Yeah, I was going to say, the fact that one's coming out every 6 months isn't helping.
I mean, this literally came out 50 weeks late from when it was originally solicited.
It feels like I get a book every 6 months. Maybe it's been different.
But it's a question of how much of his art style we so associate with Marvel and DC because he was one of the iconic artists for them at various points.
And while these characters in some ways are archetypal,
it's not a superhero book. It's a sci-fi book.
How do I want to put this? Yeah.
It feels more like a Star Trek story than an Avengers or Justice League story.
I was going to say it feels more like the Legion.
That's fair. That's fair.
Or the one it really feels like is Alien Legion.
Okay.
To me. But, it doesn't feel like George. And it doesn't have that New Teen Titans vibe either, with like the kids and the soap opera stuff. And
I think, well, he's a talented writer. There are other writers that can bring out the real strength of his art.
Yeah.
And it may also be that the inker may be not the perfect match. And again, it may be some production value type stuff. I certainly don't think he's gone downhill as an artist.
No.
But there's something about this that just didn't click with me. And it sold, you know, 5,038 units. And granted, it's Boom versus a DC Marvel. It's not a superhero thing, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of reasons for that. Delays, again, being a huge one. But I would like to see what he does next be something that really connects with a wider audience.
And I think some of these covers that aren't necessarily his, or even some of the ones that are his, aren't helping.
Yeah.
Some of those flat covers don't look like his art either.
Two others I want to mention real quick. 286, we got Bruce Lee Dragon Rises number 2.
Yep.
It fell 33%, a little over that, to 5,360. given all the other drops we see and stuff like that, this is a little higher than I might have expected, but I don't think it's alarming. I don't think it's a big problem. This is a title that I think once it finds its level, could do fairly well at whatever that is. I want to see it get a chance. I'm still enjoying that book quite a bit. So again, we'll see how it goes. And then at 282, we've got Stargate Atlantis Back to Pegasus number 1 from American Mythology.
Ah, wow. I was going to say, yeah, you guys reviewed this one.
5,432 units. And I'm not thinking we're going to see a second issue on the list.
You ordered it, right?
Yeah, and I'm going to keep going with it. But I think I am a more loyal reader than the average reader, perhaps?
Yes.
I think that's a polite way of saying that. I think there are going to be a lot of people who may have thought they were Stargate Atlantis fans, read that, and maybe realized that they were not as hardcore as maybe the creative team was hoping they would be.
Well, that was what was very interesting to me. I know you as a fairly loyal Stargate fan, and yeah. Drew admitted he wasn't much of a fan at all. He'd seen the movie, maybe a few episodes here and there. And the book didn't seem to speak to either of you very well. So it was not a matter of the level of fandom that made the book speak, unless it was some uber fandom that even you do not approach yet.
I felt it was geared to an uber fan. Somebody who, since the series went off the air, has been every night rewatching Stargate SG-1 Atlantis Universe, Stargate SG-1 Atlantis Universe, you know, literally ad nauseum, and memorized the stuff. I would have to rewatch the series finale to get enough, and that might even not be enough, to get enough into the space to really follow that first issue.
Like I said, Drew didn't seem to have any problems following it, doesn't seem to be an uber fan, just didn't seem to care for it.
To me, it was so reliant on key plot points from, you know, half a decade ago or more.
Yeah.
It just, I was disappointed. I was hoping for more. I'm going to give it a little more time. I'd like to see them be successful with this. But if we never see this on the list again, I won't be surprised.
Well, and I think you guys talked about it when you reviewed it, and possibly we brought it up on this show. Bill and Ted, at the beginning, suffered from a bit of that.
The difference is...
And you even took the time to watch the two films, like right before that series came out.
I did, but it was based on two films, and I'm glad I'd watched the two because the second was a bit more forgettable than the first.
Exactly. I'm in the same boat. I the first one I can almost quote. When I read that issue, I went, oh, I should pull my DVD of the second one out because I don't remember that one that well.
I guess the difference for me is Stargate Atlantis, Back to Pegasus, was following on the heels of literally 15 seasons, if you count SG-1.
Yeah.
Of continuity, of history, of world building, universe building. And where that particular series left off at a particular point with that final episode. So it's covering such a bigger base of material than two movies. When you do a follow-up property or comic to something like that, you've got to, and I think Titan's doing it right with the Doctor Who stuff, you've got to have the iconic, recognizable aspects. It's got to feel true to the source material, but it's also got to be accessible to new readers. When they're doing the Doctor Who stuff, they start each series typically, not always, but typically, let's add a new companion. She's got to meet the Doctor. So I, the reader, can meet the Doctor. That just is good storytelling. Is it cliche? Is it formulaic? Well, yeah, but it works. They did none of that. Whereas Stargate Atlantis, Back to Pegasus, had the opportunity of introducing a new commander to the station, a new person, introducing him around, and, oh, now I get to know who the cast is again. I remember this guy. Oh, I don't remember him. Oh, well, you know, now I know him. There were missed opportunities there. And I can't imagine that this doesn't drop by half or more and get so far below the radar, even of the small and indie comics, that we're unlikely to see it show back up on the list.
And again, we hate to see that for a property you enjoy, but American Mythology, what else do we know about them? I didn't know anything about them until this.
They're doing a Three Stooges comic that I have not read. I've read the first issue of Pink Panther, and while it may have been true and appropriate for Pink Panther, it was not to my liking. So that's not one I'm going to continue with. And I would have to look up what else they're doing. They've gotten some good properties. They just haven't been able to, from, again, the two I've read, really make them work. And again, maybe Pink Panther will do fine. Maybe it's more of an all-ages book or kids book than I'm into. But I think I was definitely part of the target audience and potentially a very easy sell for Stargate Atlantis Back to Pegasus. So for them to have not hooked me, I see as a bad sign.
Looking at their website, it looks like they're bringing back Eagle, who apparently is an old black and white from the 80s that I don't even remember.
That might have been like a 2000 AD thing, maybe? I don't know.
Eagle is described as a blend of detective-style stories, martial arts, and the occult with psychic powers. Know nothing about that. And they're doing an original series, Volcano Source. And the cover looks like a dinosaur that lives in a volcano.
Bottom line is, at this point, I am, all other things being equal, if a book comes out from American mythology, that's not going to get it on my pull list.
Yeah.
Whereas, say, if it did from maybe Aftershock, it might. Because I've read Replica and Super Zero and Rough Riders and been pretty much enjoying what they're doing. And for a new publisher, that reputation you get, both in terms of kind of critical reception, but also in terms of sales, that really sets the stage for how well you can and can't do later on, I think. I think you can escape from that, but it's an uphill battle. Whereas if you know, a retailer or a reader takes a chance on a new upstart publisher and it's like, wow, this is good, they're predisposed to try you again. If they say, wow, this kind of sucked, or it wasn't for me, or it didn't make money, or a negative reaction of whatever sort, it's good, but not for me, would even count there, they're less likely to come back and try more of your books.
That is unfortunate. Yeah, it looks like they've got a series called Death's Dark Angel as well. And Zombie Proof.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Again, love to see them, you know, pick things up and find something that works better for you and for some other people.
Yeah. Again, I know one of the guys who's on the creative team for Stargate Atlantis. I may chat with him if I see him at San Diego. Just see what plans they've got and if they felt they were on the right track or not. Because, I mean, maybe they did. Maybe I missed something. I don't know. I'm curious.
Well, hey, and you're going to get a shot to see the second one. So maybe your opinion will change after you read that one.
I'll keep going. I mean, I've gotten all of the Stargate comics that I'm aware of that have come out. And some of them were trying to think of a charitable way to say amateurish. but yeah, shaky art. It's not bad, but it's somebody that needed more time, more guidance, something to really tighten up the work or whatever. Yep. Wasn't that bad.
Here's what I'll say. Let's go back to a happier note.
Sure.
Back all the way up at rank 66. 4001 AD from Valiant, 27130. I got to think Valiant's extremely happy with that.
I got to think so, too. Most of their books don't do anywhere near this well. I'll be honest, when this started, the stuff I'd seen of this time frame of their world from Rye and stuff had left me a little cold. But the 4001 AD Bloodshot that I've read, the Exo, or one or two of the others, I'm really enjoying this stuff. I think they're doing some great work.
Cool. I might have to go check that out a little bit farther, actually quite a bit farther down the list. I am finally reading a Valiant book again, A&A number 3 at 7,058, kind of in the middle of the pack. Divinity number 2, Divinity 2 number 2 at 10,000. The Exo Man of War, AF 4001 at 8,000. Rye actually picked up with issue 13, almost 10%. Do you have any explanation for that one?
I believe it's because of the 4001 AD stuff. It's in his native time frame.
Okay, fair enough. And yeah, then kind of their regular stuff, you know, Bloodshot Reborn, A&A Ninjak, Exo Man of War Annual, kind of all in the 7,000 range.
Valiant's doing some good stuff. Haven't heard anything lately on their movie stuff, but they had gotten a big influx of cash or whatever, partnered with an Indian company, I believe, to be doing like a Harbinger movie, an Exo movie, that kind of stuff. It'll be interesting if that comes to fruition, how that kind of benefits or doesn't Valiant, because it sounds like they're planning on taking some of their early story arcs and just kind of doing that in movie format. So it could be a very much kind of like the Marvel Cinematic Universe has worked out well. Whether it's really benefited Marvel Comics or not, it's another matter. But I think in this case, there would be straight translations in terms of, you like this movie, this is the trade to read, where it could actually turn out very beneficial for Valiant on the comic side, as well as just getting them kind of a high profile on the mass market.
Yeah, and a few other indie books I wanted to point out that seem to be doing really well. Rank 164, Rat Queens number 16, 12,091. Seems to have found a very stable point, kind of around 12,000. It got a little higher than that. It's kind of come back down to this and is settling in there. Again, black numbers on the percentage change, always a good thing to see.
Hey, even if it's fluctuating a little, if it's relatively stable,
yep,
that's awesome. Yeah. Then it's predictable sales, and they can kind of budget and plan accordingly.
Yeah. So, yeah, that one doing pretty well. I don't know. You see anything else that's particularly interesting?
Legends of Tomorrow from DC is 11,353 units. It's down 10%, but for a $7.99 comic with four features, that's not bad. Whether it's viable or not, I'm not sure. But it's one of the few kind of anthology books going on. The other one from DC being the Suicide Squad Most Wanted, Deadshot Katana, which is doing 12,725. This is one where I often wonder if they're better off doing them under the same cover, or if they should have just split these into different books. And if they could have done that, if you've got four features in Legends of Tomorrow that you're doing at $7.99, could you have done these as kind of slimline $1.99 books independently? And how would that have played out?
And they would have all sold 10,000, you would think. And just based on the fact that it would be a DC mainline book, you think it would have sold that. And, you know,
even if one of them does above that, you kind of are better off. And the only other cost you would have had is three more covers.
Yeah.
And maybe that would have been cost prohibitive. I don't know.
Oh.
But we got all that. Trying to think, is there anything else that was...
It's because I don't know anything about it. Rank 122 and 129. Legends of Wonder, is this a digital book I'm not familiar with?
Or? It's a digital first kind of, okay. I don't want to say a retelling, but a telling of Wonder Woman's origin in kind of the World War II era, I believe.
Which origin?
A new one.
Fair enough. Okay.
It's, she's come to the man's world. Oh, she's got to fit in. Oh, you know, it's not the classic origin. It's similar-ish to kind of the Superman American Alien, but not quite.
But not digital first. But not the 252 origin either.
No.
Yeah.
It's its own thing.
Cool.
Yeah. Looking at the price points, we've gotten to the point where there's just not many. Currently, $3.99 is, by and far the overwhelming price point, with 211 of the 300 items on it, 41 items at $2.99. I am hoping to start to see this shift a bit next month as we start getting the Rebirth titles and a lot of the DC stuff back at $2.99. We'll see how that plays out. Most of the list is, you know, unsurprisingly, issue 12 or below. Go figure. Titles don't last that long. We are starting to see a couple of the higher numbers coming back, starting next month with Detective and Action resuming their original numbering. But it was one of those things where we had a lot of titles going down, in some cases significantly, in other cases moderately.
Yeah.
Nothing too surprising there. As Civil War II kicks in, as Rebirth kicks in, I'm expecting to see quite a bit of activity in the Marvel and DC side. I'm hoping that doesn't push out the independents. It might. And then I'm also expecting, as we start to get into the convention season, some other big announcements and other things that may shake stuff up. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. It should be an interesting few months. And we said that about a year ago, and we'll see what happens this time.
I'm really hoping Rebirth clicks with the audience and we start to see DC competing on a bit more even keel with Marvel, because I think that's just good for the industry. But again, don't know yet. Anything else? Does it pretty much do it?
I'm good.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics usually used the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust and needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or SKUs and items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath logic and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.